When most people say ghetto, they mean unrefined, low class, cheap, or inferior, especially when it comes to Black people.
At least until it's co-opted by everybody else and suddenly becomes pop culture.
But we're reclaiming ghetto and rejecting white supremacist norms regarding how we're supposed to look, think, or be.
And we aren't waiting for Black ingenuity to be colonized to celebrate it. Absolute means to the largest degree possible, having unlimited power and influence, or simply unrestrained.
I'm Malcolm.
I'm Sade. And this is... Well, this is my little sister, Lola. She's about to bring it home for y'all. What this is, Lola?
This is... Absolute Ghetto.
Hello, everybody. This is the Absolute Ghetto.
Welcome back. Hey, everyone. So today we're going to be talking about Black culture and what happens with popular culture. And we're going to also be talking about the Black Studies movement. And we're going to be talking about Black contributions to music. So we're super excited to get into the weeds about all of those different things. And how basically Black people are just creative as hell.
Can look at this as like a sort of a continuation of our first episode, where we primarily focused on our concept of the absolute ghetto in terms of our own experiences and journeys, but now we really want to highlight some of the real life tangible impacts the Black community has had on the U.S. and the world as a whole, and what we can learn from that.
Yeah. So let's get into the Black beauty, the Black excellence.
Hey!
So first, we're going to talk about contributions to Black culture and how it's often conflated with popular culture or internet culture, whatever white people are calling it at whatever given time. And so...
Right.
Yeah, so I found this book by a Black scholar named Simone Drink. And in the book, she talks about kind of she delineates the difference between like Black culture and pop culture. And in the book, like, she references the show Atlanta. And like, when Donald Glover was making that show, there was an interview clip where he was like, yeah, no, the show is really confusing to a lot of people. And that's kind of the point, is to show them they don't understand Black culture as much as they think they do, because they're on the internet all the time, because they've seen certain rap videos or whatever makes them think that they now completely understand what the Black experience is and what it's like, where Black culture is sourced from.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was a really good way to open up this discussion.
Right. So, let's just talk about AAVE to start off with. AAVE stands for African American Vernacular English, in case there's anybody listening who does not know that. And AAVE is a dialect of English that was developed by African Americans. And it really is something where, you know, if you speak AAVE and you can understand it, you can really say that you're bilingual, because it's crazy. How many times I'll see something on, you know, like something on social media, with like someone speaking in AAVE, and like let's say they're speaking fluent AAVE, you know, like fluent AAVE, and people will be like, I have no idea what they're saying. And it's because sometimes they'll be like, oh, they're from a certain area. Like, oftentimes it's Atlanta, or like sometimes it'll be New York. It could be Chicago. Like, it depends on where it is, but even different cities with communities of Black people will have their own like sub dialects of AAVE. It really is its own language or languages. And it's as not like a valid dialect, or it's not appropriate to speak in school or like even in public, or it's unprofessional, or you sound uneducated or whatever. Like, there are really innovative things about AAVE, but I'll get into that in a second. So the controversy that Malcolm is referencing is this really popular online creator had gone on, I think it was TikTok,
TikTok.
And she made this video where she's talking about like stan culture and appropriation of AAVE and the difference between the two. And She was basically conflating like AAVE with stan culture, right? So, for example, she had said that, Nicki Minaj said, Wu Chow, like on her Instagram Live one day, and it became this huge meme. Now, that's true. And did it become a part of stan culture? Yes. But it didn't become a part of stan culture before it was like deeply embedded in AAVE dialect, like black mothers.
Nicki Minaj did not make my grandma was saying child, my great grandmother was saying
My mom was saying child, like
exactly. Nicki Minaj didn't make, you know, we love language. Nicki Minaj, but Nicki Minaj didn't make that.
No, she didn't make it at all. But Nicki Minaj is a black woman, so you know it makes sense why that was in her vocabulary. And of course, it's a metaphor for how the greater culture will grab onto a piece of a black culture, AAVE or whatever it may be, and it becomes viral. It becomes pop culture, right? Like stan culture. I mean, essentially, you could equate it to like pop culture. That word that they heard Nicki Minaj say one time becoming so, I mean, honestly, like pervasive in the internet. Like you cannot go on like two social media sites. Like, you know, if you can't go like on Instagram and then get on Twitter without like seeing child, like it's just not going to happen anymore. It's actually becoming really, annoying, but
because it's like it's the entry point, like their entry point to black culture is through pop culture, it's through entertainment and this like extractive element of like and that's kind of tying it back to that article that I was talking about, the book, is that basically like people they consume like aspects of black culture that has been packaged specifically for them. And then they feel now that they are experts, that they are, people who can determine what is and what isn't. Like even the fact that this woman thought that she could speak on what is black culture and what isn't is ludicrous. You know what I mean? And so I think that that's a huge part of it, is like this commodification of black culture where it's like they take elements from it. And like, that's why the Nicki Minaj part is such a big part, is that like, she's a super popular, legendary entertainer in her own right, which we love that about her, but she becomes kind of like the harbinger of black culture. She becomes the place where people are able to encounter black culture for the first time. And that's where, like, I don't even think stan culture is actually a thing. A lot of it is just regurgitated
black culture
that they learned like, from black,
like,
right?
Isn't like the foundation of stan culture is like literally ballroom culture, is it not? Like black ballroom culture?
Yeah.
Isn't that the foundation?
Exactly. Which is black culture. Yeah.
And I just want to insert this quote from this professor, Professor Frank Bramlett at UNO. Said, historically, blues and rock and roll bands like the Rolling Stones have used AAVE in their lyrics, actually. Like, one band in their 1971 track, You Gotta Move, took its lyrics from an African-American spiritual, like an ancient African-American spiritual. The lyrics were, you gotta move, child. Oh, chow. Oh, they probably said chow, actually. They probably said chow. You know, them white people had to put the D at the end. They didn't understand. But, oh, when the Lord gets ready, you gotta move. So this has been happening for decades, for hundreds of years. You know, just like slow appropriation of African-American culture into popular culture in ways that you wouldn't even know. Like, would you have known that this random song from 1971 called You Gotta Move, like, came from an African spiritual, unless I just told you? No, you wouldn't have. Exactly. So, and that's how, you know, they rewrite the history books. They take things and they rewrite it and make it seem like, oh, it came from them when it came from us.
Yeah, and so, like, you have... It's being commodified. You have, you know, people are literally like sitting with their pen and paper trying to copy the way that we say words in our sentence structure and all the nuances of African American vernacular. And then at the same exact time, you have, and Sade talked about it a little bit, but like you have black kids being you know, told they're not smart, that like, oh no, you don't want to do that, you don't want to speak this way. And I think it's really a disservice to a lot of Black kids that the system at large, but even Black elders, will come and try to tell them to not like speak in AAVE, because they are recognizing that like the larger power structure is not going to value them if they do that. And so it's like it's complex. It's not completely out of malice, but like at this, it's just crazy to me that like our culture is only, it's only valid to certain people when it's commodified. But like when Black people are just going about their lives and trying to, you know, when we're trying to express ourselves and when we're just trying to like, have something for us, then, oh, it's something bad. It's something to be demonized. It's something that's not good. It's really not right.
It's also ignorant to suggest that AAVE would imply anything about like how smart you are or how capable you are, especially with how innovative AAVE is. I mean, a lot of people who know AAVE may know the way that Black people often use the word be, quote unquote be. And it's really interesting how we use be actually as like a replacement for like a phrase in the English language that in like standard English and like classic English, there's no word for the how we use be. So an example of what I'm talking about would be like, oh, he be at the store. Oh, he be chilling, you know. Oh, he be going on runs every morning. He be, oh, you know, oh, she be cooking. She be, oh, damn, what the hell? Because, I'm just like, why did I say, like, be for, like, all these things? And then, like, when I said she be cooking.
She be playing tennis.
Like, oh, my God. Like, why did I say
that? Shout out to Serena Williams.
Like, anyways.
Yes.
But, yeah, it's like, it basically means you are in the habit of doing something. You're often doing something. You tend to be doing something, that kind of thing. But in the English language, like, you can really just say like, oh, you tend to, or like a lot of times they're doing this or whatever it may be. There's no word just to like encapsulate like that, what you, that message you're trying to get across. In standard English, the way we've taken be and used it, you know, to like mean like an entire string of words. So black language and AAVE is innovative, and kids who use it are learning, you know, how to conceptualize things in different ways than you would if you just use standard English. Like, if you even think about like when you learn a different language in school, like, you know, if it's like English or French or Chinese or whatever language that your school's offered, if you took those languages, you know, they'll often teach you that your language will shape your perception of the world, your perception of things. And the fact that AAVE, you know, has all of these interesting words that, you know, you can't really replicate in the same way in standard English, is shaping our perception of the world in a very unique way and giving us just like a whole new way to view things and express things. So it's really an advantage to be a speaker of AAVE, to be bilingual, as Malcolm likes to say. And yeah, we just wanted to highlight AAVE here today and just acknowledge its power, because it is like AAVE is powerful, the way it's infiltrated the entire world, literally. I mean, is there any other words you can think of that, like, I mean, there's so, I was at Little Five Points the other day. I was in Atlanta.
Yeah.
I was at Little Five Points the other day, and I was in this thrift store, and there's like these young white girls. Like, they had to be teenagers. Like, if they were in their 20s, they looked super young. Like, so I think they were probably in their teens, and they were saying, like, they were speaking AAVE, like, and it was just so weird to like walk by them. And the thing is, I like, by the way they looked, I knew they got it from the internet, you know. Like, they were, and it was like, It's one thing if you walk by, you know, a group of white people and you hear one of them say the word dope or something like that. But, you know, there's like a couple words in passing, but I was standing like by them for a minute or two, and like, everything, like, they were speaking, like, they were saying dead ass. They were saying, like, all types of words. I was like, where did y'all learn dead ass? Like, but I know where it was. The internet.
Now, the question is, was the placement correctly? Was the sentence structure...
It was correct.
Oh, wow. They did their homework.
Yeah, they did their homework. As they be doing, their homework and appropriating it right on up. So...
Right. Hey. When you see a little black kid, don't, and they're speaking AAVE, don't you dare, like, insult their intelligence, one, but two, take away what Sade is talking about, like, that they already understand this different way of conceptualizing, language and thinking about the world. And they have this way that they can relate to their own community, to other black people. And so I just feel like, it needs to be treated with respect. You know what I mean? Also within our own community, it's something to be celebrated. It's something that, like, we should want. Like, if a kid is, like, this is another thing. Like, if the kid is at the function and everyone's speaking AAVE and he can't understand, like, if that were my kid, that would be a problem to me. And it's not like we could teach you, but, like, I would have to, like, reevaluate how I was parenting if, like, I've kept you so separated from your own culture that, like, people speaking in your own language is something that you can't, like, people brag about that. I've seen people in different spaces that I was in where they couldn't speak AAVE and they couldn't, like, why are you speaking, like, why are you speaking quote unquote, proper English at the function, at the family function? Like, why are you doing that? You know what I mean? They'll be like, well, and they would try to imply they're smarter than everyone. And it's like, no, you already got the whole game twisted. You know what I mean? Like, we know how to speak that way too. But we don't, because we understand that this is beautiful and we're at the family function. Like, what are you doing?
Right, exactly.
Don't do that to the black kids anymore. Like, please don't do that.
Yeah, stop doing that to the black kids. So, of course, AAVE isn't the only contribution that black people have given pop culture at all by a long shot. There's many more examples, whether it be... like food or fashion or whatever it is, but particularly actually in one of our first Instagram posts, I highlighted Dapper Dan. So let's talk about fashion for a second. Dapper Dan is a fashion pioneer. He pretty much invented street style. He invented the monogram, the, like, Gucci, you know, right now he's the creative director of Gucci, but, like, the Gucci monogram that you see everywhere, the Louis Vuitton monogram that you see everywhere, all these, like, the print that you see everywhere, is, like, you can't, like, scroll on Instagram with seeing, like, some sort of monogram print. And he really was, like, the inventor, the honer, the perfecter of that style, and he popularized it. So that's just another example of, you know, black culture and, I mean, streetwear in general, you know, is black clothing pretty much. But I wanted to highlight Dapper Dan in particular because he is a fashion pioneer, a black fashion pioneer, and his influence is global. And I just think it is so interesting how even, like, smaller fashion brands or, like, fast fashion brands now that aren't, like, the luxury, like, Louis Vuitton or Gucci, they'll, like even, like I said, like, Pretty Little Thing, like, a little, like, a cheap women's clothing site will have, like, a sweatsuit that has, like, a monogram Pretty Little Thing logo, like, all over it. And that is, like, Dapper Dan pretty much invented that. Like, you know, that came from a black person. And so that's just another example of, you know, black culture, you know, starting small and then blowing up and infiltrating, like, the entire world and, you know, being appropriated by different brands and taken by different people. And it's not that, like, Dapper Dan didn't want his clothing to be global and to be influential, but it just goes to show you how innovative we are and how influential we have been throughout the world in many different spaces. It's, like, it's this, like, this cool factor that comes with, like, being black that people want to literally embody. So they take all those elements and then they'll change their own features to look more like they're black. I mean, let's talk about how plastic surgery, like, you know, they're pretty much going for, like, a shape that is that black women are known to have, you know. So but yeah,
and like, even if they don't have that hair, like, that they want, like, everyone is trying to look like a light skin Like, oh yeah, it's like, it's like black but not too black, you know what I mean? Like, you get the aesthetic of blackness without having to absorb all of it, you know. You have the long loosely curled hair, and like that's what a lot of these artists, like musical artists and models and whatnot, are actually like, they're trying to look mixed. It's clear that they're recognizing how awesome blackness is, but they don't want, you know, like, the power structure in this country and black people forever has been one of extraction. And so you see that same element of like them trying to take different parts that they find desirable and that they find like valuables, that they can make money from it and using it. But none of these are ever to actually uplift black people. And so it's like, it's never like, it's not a compliment in that regard that they are trying so hard to copy us, because it's all about profiting for it on their own. None of the profits are ever redistributed. Right. It never comes back to actual black people most of the time.
Right. It's about sucking out the resources.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we could talk about black culture, black contributions to pop culture forever, but I think we're going to move into black studies now, right?
Yep. So more people, because of so-called civil rights reform, getting more access to higher education. And when these black people get to these institutions, to the academy, they're seeing that like our culture is not reflected at all. It's not being respected. Again, what we were discussing more of our entertainment like contributions, but like our scholarly contributions, and how to think about the world and formulating like how we navigate the world is not being acknowledged or respected or incorporated at all. And so basically, like, in line with like the different organizations and ideologies that were pervasive at that time concerning the liberation of black people, they said, we're going to have that here in the academy. We're going to create a space where basically we're able to formulate our own theories, we're able to formulate our own scholarly traditions that are not tainted by Eurocentrism, that view white people as like the center of the world and the producers of all thought. And so that's how we get, you know, a very abbreviated version of how we get the Black Studies movement. And so the Black Studies movement is not merely like, it's important, it's not just African-American history. Like, that's not what it's about. It's literally about coming up with a whole new way of approaching the world and thinking about the world. And so,
right, it's about thinking critically about issues that, at least the way that I conceptualize it, about issues that affect us like acutely, and then like how we can take our knowledge of those issues and our new way of thinking about those issues to like benefit the world at large and benefit the world as a whole.
Right. And uplifting ways that black people have been thinking about the world for a long time. Cause it's, of course, we're building upon traditions that came from before, but like the point of it is that like black people have been thinking about the world for a long time. And so I think it's important to say like, there's lots of different applications of black studies. Like, you have things like black politics, you have things like black psychology, and stratification economics is a newer thing in the econ field, where you have people kind of taking these traditions of how some of the black scholars and thinkers who came before us were thinking about the world and incorporating that. Because white people didn't make up economics. White people weren't the first people to think about power or how we allocate resources or how like our social context influences like how we navigate the world. Like, again, black people have been thinking about these things and coming up with theories about it for a while. And so it's about uplifting that and moving it forward.
Exactly. I was going to say, in my own field, criminology, black studies is extremely important because of the racial disparities when it comes to the U.S. justice system and mass incarceration and all of these issues that we have with. It's really impossible to do a deep dive on, you know, any subject in criminology without also considering race. Like, if you don't consider race, it's really surface level. And black studies has proven, black studies scholars who have made big contributions to the field of criminology have shown us that if you don't take race into account when you think about these issues of crime and punishment, you know, you aren't going to get at the real root of the issue. I mean, when I like what I was saying about, oh, it's not, it's about looking at issues that affect the Black community acutely and then using it to elevate society as a whole through rectifying some of the disparities in the criminal justice system when it comes to African Americans. We are also going to greatly improve and ameliorate, you know, our relationship with crime and punishment and mass incarceration and all of these things as a whole in the U.S. It will benefit everybody to consider how these issues affect African Americans acutely, because, you know, it's meant to be so oppressive. By nature of that, some people who like weren't supposed to be like in the catch-all are gonna get caught sometimes. You know what I mean? So like, it's gonna elevate everybody to look at these issues of race in the criminal justice system.
For sure. And Sade is definitely touching a little bit on some of the intellectual tradition of abolition that I'm sure a lot of people have heard about with the social movement that's happening right now with calls to do things like abolish police, abolish prisons, things of that nature. And like a lot of people will say, like, oh, well, what are we going to do if we don't have these institutions that we have come to see as vital and necessary? And it's amazing. That's kind of like to her point of like Black studies benefiting everybody and it moving past, like, it's not just a response to the systems of right now. It's not just a response to white supremacy, but again, it's imagining a whole new world. And so like abolitionists have been thinking about like, how do we build better connections within our community, especially in the, like a modern context, like in with Black people in the United States. So you can't call the police all the time for problems because one, they're not going to come, they're not going to fix them. And they can make situations much worse. Everyone gets shot when the police come. And so you have it where people have to figure out a way to deal with problems in their community that does not rely on the state. Again, it's something that like it may seem foreign to other people, but like certain communities have already been doing the work. And like the scholarship that has come from people doing this work has already shown a different world is for sure possible because people have had to do it and have been doing it. And so I think that's like one of the amazing things about Black studies as a whole.
I think we wanted to shout out a few of our favorite Black scholars. Both of us had Dr. Carr at Howard University. Shout out Dr. Carr, the chair of the Afro-American Studies Department. Malcolm actually pulled a quote from his one of his class notes, didn't he? What did Dr. Carr say?
So I found this. I really liked how he said this. He said, Afro studies is not merely African-American history. It is its own intellectual toolkit to evaluate elements of the world so that we can pursue global Black liberation. I think that's put perfectly like what the point of Black studies. Yeah. Again, it's a revolutionary field. You know what I mean?
It's about liberating and freedom.
Exactly.
So we're gonna link Dr. Carr's information in the show notes for sure. Another scholar that both of us really love is Angela Davis. Has been extremely instrumental in the abolitionist movement, the prison abolitionist movement. She's been one of the leading scholars in thinking about ways that we can go about, you know, like correcting societal harms and ameliorating societal harm without the use of prisons. And like, what does a world without prisons look like? It's extremely important because, I mean, so many people, if you tell them, oh, abolish prison, they're like, oh, well, where do, like, I mean, Malcolm and I still struggle with this. Where do we put, like, you know, all the people who like cannot be helped? Where do we put you know, the people who are going to keep harming people regardless of what you do? Where do we put like the most violent offenders or the repeat offenders? Like, what do we do with them? And, you know, she has answers. So we're definitely going to link her information. And did you have any more you want to shout out, Malcolm?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Kimberlé Crenshaw. I am always referencing the theory of intersectionality when I'm at my job and like thinking about like how people can have multiple identities that marginalize them. Like she talks about how with Black women, like you have to deal with the oppression and discrimination that comes for being Black. And you also have to deal with the oppression and discrimination that comes from being a woman at the same exact time. And so that's like been super helpful in conversations that I've had in my job, people thinking that I am more clever than I am. And I always have to shout out, no, I got that from Kimberly Crenshaw. And another scholar that has been super influential to me is Kathy Cohen, and her work dealing with like advanced marginalization, which is basically like with intersecting identities, like that there is conflict sometimes between these identities. It could cause further oppression for the person who has the identities. And so it's like, I mean, especially like with Black women, Black queer people, like we all know about like how sometimes like there is this discarding effect that happens with our own community, rather that be like, you know, whatever identity that you're having. There'll be times where, like, if you're talking about queer people, they're talking about white gay men usually. If you're talking about women, they're talking about white women, so on and so forth. And so kind of talking about that nature of discarding. There's just so many more scholars that have been super influential to me. Go ahead.
Before we move on, I want to shout out Dr. Muhammad, another Howard University professor, because she, I mean, my field, which is psychology and criminology, she was extremely instrumental in like changing my outlook on a lot of the issues that I care deeply about in terms of Black liberation from the mass incarceration system. And she actually had one class where it was half students, half incarcerated people that I took in a prison. So we would go to the prison and we would take the class with the incarcerated students. And then she also innovated, another example of the absolute ghetto, innovated and took the idea of, well, it's called Inside Out, this like class template where you have like half students, half incarcerated people. So that came from somebody else, but she innovated and she decided to make her own like new class that had half students, half police officers. And I took that class as well. And it was extremely influential in like the way I think about policing and community policing. Of course, it's still F the police, but I mean, the whole point of Black studies, as we've iterated many times, is like thinking about issues that deeply affect your community and working with your community and using scholarship and working with your community like through that scholarship to, you know, rectify some of those issues. So that was like that's a great example of that. I think the half policemen, half students template allowed them to have a space where they could come listen to young Black kids who have often been severely affected by malpractice and policing and police corruption and police brutality, and listen to our thoughts and then hopefully go and apply that to, you know, the way they police when they're out, you know, on the field every day. So shout out Dr. Muhammad. I'm going to link her information in the show notes as well. And I think that's it, right?
Yeah, I could definitely go a lot longer for scholars who have influenced me. But yeah, we could definitely move on.
Okay. All right. So we want to talk about the music. That's our last little segment for today. Black music. Before we get into Black music, I'm going to give y'all a quick list of Black contributions to music. So let's start with so we had work songs, field and street songs, protest songs, we had game songs and social songs, and then we had syndicated dance music. That's all like from the 1500s, 1600s, especially work songs and field songs. Then we had folk spirituals and arranged spirituals. We had folk gospel and gospel hymns and traditional gospel. Then we had gospel groups. We also had rural blues and boogie woogie and gospel quartets and urban blues and rhythm and blues. And then we had ragtime, brass bands, New Orleans style jazz, early jazz bands, swing bands, and bebop, which we're going to get a little more into in a second. That's just a few more genres from like the 1800s and the 1900s. And then the later 1900s, in the early 2000s, we have gospel groups, we have hard bop, we had rock and roll, we had civil rights freedom songs, we had rock, we had soul, we had soul jazz, modern jazz, we had cool, we had, of course, rap and hip hop, disco, funk, go-go, electro funk, house, techno. Okay. I did too much, but
no, it's like you can't do enough because we did it all.
We did it all.
Yeah.
But today we actually want to talk specifically about jazz and hip hop because those are two of our favorite genres. So
yeah, and definitely really pertinent to the discussion that we've been having. I think one of the things that's really cool. So like just a broad background on jazz, and she listed a lot of iterations of jazz in that long list of our contributions to music. Mm-hmm. But basically, like, you have Black people who are in this country, and you have different African cultures that have coalesced because we've been displaced and we had to make it happen on our own. And so you have them taking the mixture of these different cultures along with, like, some influences from the popular music from the white people at that time and making something that's completely new. Jazz music is like one of the most popular forms of music in the world to this day. And like, actually a lot of the times when people think of American music, they think of jazz and also hip hop, which we're going to get into that. I thought it was really interesting. Like, one, I spent a little bit of time in the jazz department at Howard. I overheard someone, they were talking about like bebop, one of the forms of jazz. And like, if anyone's ever tried to like transcribe or play a Charlie Parker solo, you know that bebop is really, really, really hard. Like, it's complicated. Mm-hmm. There's lots of like weird chord, like substitutions, right, and voicings, yeah, and scales that you could use, mm-hmm, to improv. Like, there's just a lot going on. And so, I heard one of the people, at the Howard Jazz Department, he was like, yeah, actually, like, when people were making, bebop, like when Black people were making bebop, Black jazz artists, they were like, we about to make something that these white cats can't copy. And so it was hard on purpose, because right, it was something that we were going to understand kind of like throughout this episode. Like, it's like, okay, yeah, you don't understand what we're saying, you don't understand what we're playing, but we understand what we're playing, and that's what matters, because it's for us. But of course, exactly, the white people recognize that is dope as fuck, and so they're like, oh yeah, we want this tune. So they were sitting with their pen and their paper until they can get it. It took them a long time though. So it served its purpose.
Right.
Cause it's hard. Right.
So like,
but
yeah, cause like originally with jazz, a lot of times, white artists would come and, you know, they would replicate jazz and then they would profit more off of it because they were white. They could, you know, play in more clubs and get in more venues and whatever. And so bebop was like an avenue for them to, once again, innovate and be even more creative and make it something that white people couldn't replicate, so they could go back to profiting and getting their due for their invention. So
for the
absolute,
sure,
ghetto once more.
Always. Yeah, and so actually there's like a direct line from jazz to hip hop, so that's also super convenient for the conversation too. But like, one, right, of the key elements to jazz is improvisation. So you have people kind of taking, mm-hmm, motifs and references from all these different things and coming up with a story, their own melody that tells a story. Yeah. And that should sound very familiar to you. And so, yeah.
Yeah, and what is improvisation just like? Freestyling, hip hop, mm-hmm, freestyling, pretty much the same thing, but with your voice instead of an instrument. There's a lot of jazz influence in hip hop for sure. I mean, a couple artists who have even sampled jazz in their music include like A Tribe Called Quest, Kanye West, Jungle Brothers, N.W.A., Tupac Shakur, plenty of other hip hop artists have sampled jazz. But yeah, like,
oh,
we're
really
saying,
quickly,
it's not only
To add to that really quickly. We have also artists like Robert, like jazz, like contemporary jazz artists who actually do a lot of production work for a lot of your popular hip hop artists. So even if they're not sampling it, like, jazz is all up and through hip hop for sure. Like, it's,
oh,
it just,
yeah,
works together.
Oh yeah, for sure. There's so many classical jazz artists who are like playing the instruments in like your new favorite trap song, like you didn't even know. Yeah, but not only just in the production and in the lyrics and the music too, there's the jazz influence, like we said, the freestyling. So we want to talk about hip hop a little bit because hip hop is the biggest genre in the US. A few years ago, I think it was 2018 or 17. or was it 16?
It was recent.
But I just remember it was recent. It was a few years ago. Hip hop became the biggest genre in the United States. Mm-hmm. So and in a country that is as white as the United States, that says a lot, because it just goes to show you how many people who are not black who consume and love hip hop. But let me talk about trap music, because that's a little more modern and a little more what, you know, our audience may be familiar, may, you know, listen to a lot. T.I. is pretty much the inventor of trap music. T.I. But he did pretty much invent trap music. He actually has a trap music museum in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm proud to be from Atlanta, because Atlanta pretty much invented trap music. I mean, let's just be honest. So, and in his museum, he highlights, of course, himself. He highlights Gucci Mane. There's a lot of early trap music pioneers that he highlights in the trap music museum. And it's actually really cool if you get a chance to go. And it has evolved into all of these, like, really interesting, like, takes on trap and hip hop. And it's not just like, now it's not just like the heavy hitting, like heavy bass and like tough lyrics all the time. Now, like, trap has even evolved into, like, you know, now there's like trap love songs, and there's like cloud rap, and there's trap ballads, like there's like mm-hmm. all these different types of trap music I really think it was like trap booming onto the scene that sort of sent hip hop, like, from, you know, hip hop was already a very popular genre, but I think it's really what sent it to like the number one spot, because it's a sound that is just like, it's so innovative and interesting to listen to, and you never know what is coming next and what they're gonna say next and what sound they're gonna put in next. Like, it's just like, it's like an experience, you know, listening to it. I mean, it's just like jazz, that improvisational nature. It really is like pretty much a child of jazz, low-key. Mm-hmm. And another thing that I wanted to talk about was the concept of mumble rap. This sort of brings it back to AAVE a little bit.
Yeah.
Now a lot of times it will be like old heads who like are like really into traditional hip hop. And then a lot of times it'll just be like people who aren't very familiar with hip hop, or, you know, people who it's not made for, like white people or whatever, who will say that, oh, like, this is mumble rap, like, or they're just mumbling, I can't understand what they're saying. And these are artists like Young Thug, for example. If you know Young Thug, then you know that sometimes it may be hard to understand what he's saying, like, I can admit that. But the thing is, to a trained black ear, mm-hmm. it's not hard to understand people like Young Thug and artists who speak in a dialect like he does, because his dialect is African-American vernacular English with a mixture of, you know, his Atlanta, like, you know, ghetto dialect. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. then he also takes that and he makes it melodic. So we have AAVE, we have Atlanta speak, and then we have melody, and he's using his voice as an instrument. And then people say they can't understand him. But the thing is, like, if you, you know, are a black person who understands AAVE, and you have like a basic understanding of, you know, even if you aren't from Atlanta, if you have a basic understanding of, you know, the way that black people sort of
form
speak and community with each other, right, form thoughts and string things together, then it's not hard to understand something like that. Like, it's not actually mumbling. I mean, I really feel like mumbling is sort of like a placeholder for the word ghetto. Like, when people say that, like, oh, this is they sound ghetto, they sound uneducated, they sound unrefined, and all those things. But if you're really listening, then it's not any of that, and it's actually an extremely creative form of rap. I'll say even one of the songs that comes to mind for me is EXO Tour Life by Lil Uzi. Because that's a trap song. It is a trap song. Like, believe it or not, yes, it is a trap song. he is speaking AAVE the entire track, as you know, a lot of black hip hop artists usually do. He also is stringing his words together in a way that isn't typical, like, you know, for, like, you know, standard English. And he's also speaking, like, he's also speaking his own, like, not his AAV, his own, like, you know, Philadelphia and, like, his Philadelphia hood dialect, and, like, sort of speaking the way that they speak. And a lot of people will say, like, I've heard a lot of people, like, listen to that song and they'll be like, oh, I have no idea what he's saying in the verses, but, like, you know, the chorus is catchy or whatever. It's like, how can you not understand what he's saying? Like, it's like,
you know,
it's like,
and it's crazy, because it's like, it's one thing, like, I don't, if you're not from that particular community, even if you are a black person who's somewhat familiar with, you know, or at least with your own version, your own region's version of AAVE, I feel like it's really disrespectful to not give our own culture the respect. Because I just think about in my own music education, like, we would listen to, like, modern. I don't know if anyone's familiar with modern music, but it sounds real, like, there's lots of discordant sounds. Like, there's lots of, it's a lot of, like, very strange things going on. But again, it's treated as, like, this prestigious art form. And people put the effort into trying to understand what's going on, even though it takes effort. And I feel like, even if, like, black art is not immediately easy for you to understand, I feel like that is not at all grounds to dismiss it or to diminish it. And also, mm-hmm. That makes me also think of, 100%. Oh my God, a fellow bison. Why is her name not coming to mind? Toni Morrison. And she talks about, like, how her books, like, a lot of white commentators and critics would talk about her books are really, really hard to read. And she was like, I'm not about to make this more accessible to you guys. Like, this is a black book for black people. She's like, right, I'm not saying you can't read it, but, like, you're going to have to put the effort into meeting us here and not the other way around.
Yeah, to meet us where we are, because we're not going to come to where you are.
Yeah, so, like, don't feel bad.
Because we like it here. Right. We like it here, you know?
If you don't understand Young Thug, that's okay. But, like, give it respect, you know what I mean? Like, put the effort into understanding and realize that that's a worthwhile endeavor. But, like, I just feel like there's so many instances in this country where the so-called dominant culture, where white people feel like they can tell us to learn anything and jump through any hoop. But it's like, whenever black people are not trying to dumb things down or to make it quote unquote more accessible, it's like, oh, now it's stupid. Now, yeah. Oh, why would you even bother? And it's like, well, because it's amazing.
Yeah, that made me think about the fact that originally when Lil Uzi released Exo Tour Life, he released it on his SoundCloud and it blew up, right? But it was like, it was recorded the way he, in his voice, the way he wanted to record it. You know, his words are slurred a little bit and he's speaking AAVE and, like, he's speaking a certain way. And then when it became, like, this huge commercial success and it was, like, number one song everywhere, then he re-recorded a version where he actually spoke more clearly. Is it the same exact lyrics?
Oh, I didn't notice.
But he spoke more clearly and he put it on Spotify and everybody hated it. at least the black people that I saw that, like, were talking about it, they're like, take that shit down. We want the original. So it's like he de-seasoned it, you know, and everyone's right. Like, take it down. we want the mumbling. It's not mumbling, like, it's AAVE.
Right.
Exactly, we want the ghetto because it's beautiful, right? And it sounds good. The fuck, like, but speaking about respect, let's talk about Post Malone.
We gotta talk about Miley too. Miley's been trying to do better. I'll acknowledge that, but we gonna get into a couple of these people. We'll start with Post Malone though, and his smelly self.
Yeah, Post Malone literally did this interview where and he is a huge hip hop artist. Like, it's crazy how big he is. Like, I don't even realize it. I'll be like, Post Malone for real? Like, he'll be headlining these festivals, but he's huge and the white people love him. But he actually said that hip-hop isn't where he goes to listen to deep music, or like when he wants to feel something or like feel emotional or whatever, then he's like hip-hop for what's fun. The word it's like shallow, and like when he wants to feel something, he goes and listens to stuff like Bob Dylan. And he also said
and his white faves.
He also said
because he racialized it.
He said I'm white, so I have a lot of emotions.
There's so much
y'all can't see my face right now, but it's like, what do you mean you're white, so you have a lot of emotions? I mean, that's something to unpack in and of itself, but just the fact that he is profiting so much off of hip hop and a black music invention, and to come into a space like this and to profit so deeply off of it, and then to speak about it like this, and to speak as if it's not there's no substance to the lyrics, or it's not where you can go to listen to something that will make you feel something or will get you in your feelings. I mean, it's just ignorant and false. We can talk about all the hip hop the woke hip hop that people love to talk about when they want people to respect hip hop more. They'll bring up people like Kendrick Lamar or J. Cole or like, you know, people like Tupac. That. But the fact of the matter is there's artists who like aren't considered necessarily the woke hip hop artists who are still saying some really interesting things, and it's not always put on a silver platter and, you know, laid out for you and spelled out for you in the same way that maybe like Kendrick Lamar will do it. But it doesn't mean it's not there. And you have to actually listen to it to get that stuff out of it, you know? So,
because you listed like mainstream artists too, right? Because it's like there's such a wide range of hip hop. So, and like, even if you take a quote unquote, or no, they actually are a mainstream artist. If you take an artist, like you talk about Lil Uzi, and Sade got me listening to Lil Uzi playlist, but like,
I gave you that playlist.
Yeah. But like, even with Lil Uzi, like, yes, he has his like party anthems and whatnot, but like Lil Uzi also be emotional as fuck. Like, he be going through it. I feel for my guy. And it's like,
exactly.
It's like, you're not listening to the music. Like, that's what I get from it. It's that like, not only are you not respecting the music, but you haven't even done the due diligence of listening to it. And so it's like, cause there's so much, there's such a wide range, and it's like, but you're boiling it down to the charts and to the white artists that you like. And like, it's like, they'll take so much time to, like, there's so many documentaries on, Bob Dylan, these other, and you know, it's not even disrespect to them. This isn't an anti, you know, I don't really know him like that, but like, I'm not even trying to come for him like that, but like, it's more of like, the same respect that you give to white artists and all of their, they be on drugs, they be going through it, they be having all these issues too, to not be respectable. But it's like, you, these white artists will pay them the respect, and they will go through their whole catalog, but you won't do that with a Lil Uzi, you won't do that with a Young Thug, you won't do that with a Lil Wayne or whoever else. And it's like, I'm thinking about Lil Wayne, all his songs too. I'm thinking about Lil Wayne got so many songs. Yeah. There's just so many hip hop songs. Like, that's just such a fallacious statement. You know what I mean?
Damn, one of my favorite Lil Wayne songs growing up was called "Tie My Hands," and it was all about the New Orleans. It was the hurricane. It was all about Hurricane Katrina. And you know, and if you don't know, Lil Wayne is from New Orleans, and I used to listen to. I've never even been in a hurricane. I used to listen to that song like I was in that shit. Like, I was feeling that shit. I was like, yes, they tie my hands. The helicopter's hovering, but they not coming down. Like, you know, like I was. Mm-hmm. I really felt that shit. So I'm like, Post Malone, what the fuck are you talking about?
You know, like, we might have to cut this. I feel like we've been keeping it very male dominated, because I feel like talking about Nicki, because I feel like Nicki has so much emotional range in her music too. But I feel like that's an episode about misogyny that maybe we should save for another time. But like, another episode. Sorry, let me not. I'm sorry. I just, because I was like, we kept saying men, and I didn't even mean to do that. We kept referencing men. Okay.
I mean, we gotta talk about a woman too, but not in a good way. Miss Miley.
Let's get into Miss Miley. Go ahead.
Miss Miley Cyrus. Okay, like, if you were alive around, like, was it 2014, then you know that Miley Cyrus had, like, a phase where she was, like, twerking, and she had, like, that famous VMA performance with, Robin Thicke, who, and she was, like, twerking all over him. Oh, right, and then she was working with, what's his name? Mike Will Made It. A really popular hip-hop producer to, like, produce her albums. And she was putting out, like, you know, very, like, hip-hop, trap-inspired music. She was still singing in some of them. She still had, like, you know, those ballads, like, Wrecking Ball and stuff like that. But she also had, like, these hip-hop songs and, like, these songs that were heavily inspired by Black culture, like We Can't Stop for one, and then 23, like, with Wiz Khalifa and Juicy J and, like, all these other artists. And she was really, like, it was like she was becoming, like, she was, like, reinventing herself as a hip-hop artist pretty much. And it's crazy because she sort of moved away from it. Like, you know, the phase lasted for however long, and it, you know, some people liked it, some people didn't. And when she moved into, like, going back to more her, like, original style of music, she did an interview where she said that, oh yeah, like, I had to get out of that space because I realized, like, how, like, superficial it was. And, like, oh, all they're talking about is, like, oh, bitches on my dick in the club, I got money, blah, 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 like, all this stuff, and fast cars. And it was just ridiculous to me to hear her say that, because first of all, I mean, she's pretty much echoing, like, Post Malone, like, kind of trying to imply that, like, all hip hop is
shallow and toxic.
Shallow and toxic. Exactly. When that's just absolutely not true. It's just, like, an ignorant thing to say. But then to, like, come and profit off of and, like, you know, build something off of a Black creation, and then to not respect it once again. Like, what's up with this trend of, like, white artists entering our space and then completely disrespecting it? Like, I mean, at least Miley waited till she was out to do that. I mean, Post Malone was out of pocket by, like, by being an established hip-hop artist, and that's why I don't listen to him. But, yeah. I mean, also, I don't like his music, except for that one song, but we're not gonna talk about that.
Is it the Spider-Man one that we all like?
No, White Iverson.
Oh, people do like that song. I do like that song. That's a good memory. It's good college memories. I remember being very drunk. Okay, anyway.
Okay.
Moving on. Let's see.
But yeah, I mean,
Miley, and I do want to say that Miley did, she apologized after she had received feedback for what she said. And I feel like it's interesting. It's still a commentary because Miley, I mean, you also have Christina Aguilera, you have, you know, her predecessors, you have Christina Aguilera, you have Britney Spears, who, like, when they, and now you have Ariana Grande, like, you have, like, when they're trying to have a more mature image, and they're trying to rebel against that kiddie image that they had before, that they're using kind of, like, Black culture and music as, like, a playground in a way. And, like, it's really interesting. That gets into, like, the intersectional stuff where it's like there are issues with, like, gender discrimination, how women are able to express themselves, but at the same time, like, you don't get to use Black culture as, like, something that you could put on and discard when you're done with it, you know what I mean? Exactly. And so I know that that's probably what, or that's what she said was her story, is that she was just in a transitional phase. She didn't know what the fuck she was doing. And so she did apologize to it. So I do want to, you know.
Yeah. But, you know, regardless about how people may feel about, you know, white people in these spaces, mm-hmm. I think me and Malcolm's, or at least where we stand right now, is that if you're going to be in these spaces and be inspired by Black people, at least show respect. Like, at least show respect. It's literally the least you can do to show respect to this art form that you are profiting off of and obviously saw value in because you're here.
Right? And it will improve your art. Like, if you want to really be in a space like that, like, there's just so much, there's so much more when you pull back the layers to our culture and to our music. And so, exactly. I mean, you're doing yourself a disservice. Yeah, by having this cursory, extractive relationship with our people. A lot of Black people are very happy to, you know, commune and share our culture. But again, you have to come with respect. If you're going to come and extract, that's a whole different story. Don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah, shout out hip hop, shout out jazz. We'll be linking their social media in the, just kidding. I think that pretty much finishes off our little discussion about Black pop culture contributions and scholarship contributions. And there's so much more we could talk about. I mean, we'd be talking for hours if we were just gonna talk about like everything, but this is just like, for our third episode, we just want to give y'all a little taste of some of our favorite most influential and inspiring to us, some of our favorite topics on Black culture and just how we've influenced the world and innovated in these different spaces. So we hope y'all enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening, and please, you know, subscribe if you haven't already, tell a friend to give us a listen to subscribe to, all of that stuff. We really appreciate you know, all of the support that you guys have given us.
All right, so of course, you know, we shout out a Black organization at the end of all of our episodes. So we felt the perfect org for this week was
the Black Youth Project. So the Black Youth Project examines the attitudes, resources, and culture of the young urban Black millennial, exploring how these factors and others influence their decision-making, norms, and behavior in critical domains such as sex, health, and politics. So we thought, you know, given our discussion of scholarship and Black ingenuity and Black contributions, this was a perfect organization to shout out and to celebrate. And so we are super thankful to the Black Youth Project. Please go ahead and give them a follow on social media. They post a lot of really cool things. I love their articles, and they post images, and it's like, really, it's a fun space. And so, yes, definitely check them out.
All of their information and their website and all that is going to be in the show notes. Shout out the Black Youth Project and all the amazing work you're doing. And yeah, we really hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. We have a Discord now. So if you if you have any ideas for more ways we can discuss this, or like have any comments or anything, or anything you want to talk about, please go follow us on Discord. The link is probably in our Instagram bio. If it's not in our Instagram bio, then we'll make sure it's available to you somewhere. And we're also going to be launching our website pretty soon. I don't know if it's up yet by the time this
it'll
is
be
out,
up but soon.
I think it actually will be up by the time we put this out. I think it actually will be up. Okay, so let's just go ahead and assume that our website will be up. So make sure you check out our website too. And we're going to be blogging about, you know, all of our episodes, you know, so that, you know, people can get like little snapshots of what we talked about. So you can go leave comments there too in our blog, or just go like click around our website. And so please look at our website. I worked really hard on it. Lots of pain, lots of tears. So please go look at it, because I didn't make it for nobody to look at it. All right, thanks.
I know that's right. All right, y'all, that's all we got for you. Stay ghetto.
All right. This is